Our lesson tonight is out of Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20, Christ's work to conquer in the angelic conflict. We learned in our first lesson in this series that Mark's gospel presents the perfect service of God's perfect servant Jesus, with Mark's focus of having rebounded unto upright Christian service from personal failure. Remember, John Mark was the same one who went with Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey, but he washed out in the mission field, became a casualty, and he turned around and went back home. And the details were never told, but there are a number of things that scholars have kind of surmised, and one of those might have been angelic conflict, because remember, Paul had gotten into a conflict with Elymas, the sorcerer, there on the island of Crete, and that might have been too much for John Mark to handle. We don't know, but that could have been. Well, sometimes such failure arises from defeating the angelic conflict. Peter warns us in 1 Peter 5:8 that we need to watch out that Satan, our enemy, prowls around as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So that may have caused Mark to abandon Paul and Barnabas in Acts 13:13 after Paul had gotten into conflict with a sorcerer in Acts 13:6-11. So we view Jesus' work to conquer in a severe angelic conflict situation in Mark 5:1-20. For our instruction. I want to read the passage first, and then we'll look at it. Mark chapter 5, 1 through 20. And they came over unto the other side of the sea, that would be the Sea of Galilee, into the country of the Gadarenes. This would be on the eastern shore. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not even with chains. Because he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken into pieces, neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. Actually, he ran and bowed down in front of him. And he cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee, or I beg you by God, that you do not torment me." For Jesus had been saying unto him, "Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, "My name is Legion, for we are many." A legion was between 3,000 to 6,000 soldiers in a Roman army, so that's a lot of demons. And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there nigh under the mountains a great herd of pigs feeding. And all the demons besought him, saying, "Send us into the pigs, that we may enter into them." And immediately Jesus gave them leave, and the unclean spirits went out and entered into the pigs. And the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and there were about 2,000 of them, and they were choked in the sea. And they that fed the pigs fled, and told it to the city and in the country, and they went out to see what was that which had been done. And they come to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the demon and had the legion, sitting, clothed, and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell him that was possessed with the demon, and also concerning the pigs. And they began to request Jesus to depart out of their coasts. And when he was come into the ship, he who had been possessed with the demon prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit, Jesus did not permit him, but said unto him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how great things the Lord has done for you and has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him. And all men did marvel. Okay, there's a lot that's going on here. Viewing the events in Christ's interaction with a demon-possessed man, what we would call a demoniac, exposes markers that we can use in identifying a potential angelic conflict situation in our lives. This was an extreme case, but it is typical of demonic activity. Even if we're getting into an angelic conflict situation where there's another party, the party may not be demon-possessed, but they may be influenced from the demonic world. We can pick up on these signals because they're very, very prevalent. First of all, you'll notice that the demoniac dwelt in the country of the Gadarenes, where many Gentiles lived and practiced pagan beliefs. This is why you had the herd of swine there. They were raising pigs. in order to sell them in the market because they would eat the pigs. Well, there were a lot of Gentiles. The Jews would not eat them. But there were a high percentage of Gentiles in the area, and so it made it feasible to raise a herd of pigs. It's very typical that we can expect to face a heightened degree of angelic conflict issues in areas of the world where wickedness abounds. When I came to Nepog Church, there's a man who shared with me that there had been witch covens on either side of the church in the woods, over here and over here. And someone who came to our church later shared with me that one of the persons at the time who lived in that house right there, right across the road, was actually a practicing witch. I do know that the area of Bantam is very heavy in witchcraft to this area. And when we first candidated to come into the area, we were told that there is a lot of witchcraft in New England, and there's a lot of spiritism and so forth. But apparently the area of Bantam is second only to Salem, Massachusetts, for its intensity of that kind of witchcraft. So we have a lot of it, and have had a lot of it. And this would, I believe, help to explain why there was a tremendous amount of tumult, I know, especially in the early days. But we should expect that. The Ivy League colleges here in New England rejected the gospel and actually threw out the inspiration of scriptures. They were the first ones actually to do it. And so I believe that there's a special emphasis on darkness in the area here, and that's why there's been a pressure that even a lot of Christians face. So we should expect that type of activity to abound where wickedness abounds. Second, the demoniac initiated a very sudden confrontation with Jesus. It says in verse 2, you'll notice that as soon as he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. This man came up to Jesus. He initiated the contact. We should also expect to discern sudden, strong confrontations from evil parties as signaling the presence of an angelic conflict. If something kind of bowls you over, it takes you off guard, that's a very clear signal. And we need to be on our guard and be aware of that and immediately go to prayer if we can, or at least think in terms of prayer. You might not have time to speak to the Lord in prayer, but you can, like Nehemiah, the king spoke to him, so he says, I prayed and I answered, which is a very quick prayer. But we need to do that. We need to be in prayer in regards to that. So if we're confronted, watch out. Then you'll notice the demoniac was antisocial. He dwelt in the tombs and in the mountains instead of staying with and relating properly with his family. We can expect pressures that counter normal marital, family, and social relationships, likely to signal angelic conflict. I put down here, you'll notice the passage, Ephesians 5, 22 to 6:9. Ephesians 5, 22 starts talking about husbands and wives. Chapter 6 starts talking about parents and children. And then it goes on to masters and slaves. And then Paul, in verse 10 of chapter 6, says, you know, put on the armor of God, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. The wrestling, where's the wrestling? The wrestling in the role of husbands and wives. The wrestling in regards to parents and children. The wrestling in regards to masters and slaves. These are the institutions that God's put us in. And anytime there's unusual conflict or pressure in those areas, those are often telltale signs of angelic conflict issues, especially if it's unusual. Many years ago, when our parents were missionaries in Nigeria, West Africa, where there's a higher tendency of this, one evening when the Africans in the village were having their autumn festival, and at that time every year they would work to try to get another person demon-possessed. This is how they would pass it on from generation to generation. My younger brother started acting very fussily, and my mother couldn't. She tried to feed him, change his diaper and everything. He was just fussy, crying. He wouldn't settle down. And Mom went to prayer about it, didn't know what to do about it. And she said, I suddenly had the tendency, gently, but nevertheless, in a rebuking way, to swat him across the mouth, just like that, as a rebuke. She said, as soon as I did it, he looked startled, lay down, and went to sleep immediately. We believe, in retrospect, it was probably demonic activity that was trying to affect my brother, because, and of course, you know, my parents are missionaries and so forth, but Mom sensed the tendency in the authority position to exercise a rebuke, like, no, this is wrong.
And it immediately stopped the situation. Of course, my little brother wasn't saved, didn't know the Lord then or anything, but that happened. So this type of situation is something that often happens. If there are problems in family, problems in marital that are unusual, or social relationships, or a person is antisocial, that's often a signal of angelic conflict issues. Then, the demoniac was disorderly and untamed. Typical of demonic activity, they put him in chains, he'd break the chains. There's something to watch out for. You have to be very careful. If there is a person that you come in contact with who actually is possessed by a demon, do not touch him because he can kill you. I saw a photograph in Nigeria of the body of a full-grown man who had been beaten to death by a 90-year-old woman who was demon-possessed. He was absolutely powerless to protect his life from her. So you do not want to touch them. This is why in the book of Acts, where some Jews took on, seven Jews took on a man who was demon-possessed, and the demon-possessed man beat them black and blue, stripped the clothes off, and the men fled out of there for their lives. It's amazing that they weren't killed. So if there is a demon-possessed person, you never touch him. You pray, and you plead the blood of Christ, and you command him in the name of Christ to come out of the person. So, but anyway, this man was disorderly, he was untamed. Very typical of demonic activity. In fact, James chapter 3 talks about disorder, and whether there's disorder and a selfish ambition, it is demonic. He actually says the word demonic there in the New International Version. I've checked it, and that's exactly what it means. Then the demoniac was emotionally disturbed. You notice he was always crying, and that's a typical signal of demonic pressure. Incidentally, a lot of emotional problems that people have, I'm convinced, have been caused or are being caused by demonic pressure. There are some people that just, they can't get over something. They're very weepy constantly, or they're constantly very, very upset. That can be a signal of demonic activity, and they need to take that to the Lord and leave it with Him. The demoniac was suicidal. You notice he was always cutting himself, and that's a signal typical of demonic pressure. Why? Demons want to attack the image of God. They will attack the image of God any way they can. They'll attack it physically, so creating suicide. They will try to attack it emotionally, try to attack it in the institutions, the marriage, and so forth. They're out to destroy people. They're out to destroy the people that they inhabit. And so this is why this man was constantly cutting himself as though to destroy himself or trying to do it. Now, the demons also in the man knew and expressed superhuman knowledge about Jesus. And we can identify badly used superhuman superficial knowledge expressed by people to originate out of an angelic conflict issue. So be very aware of that. If a person is influenced by the evil one and so forth, sometimes they will speak up and they can actually address something that you were thinking about that you didn't even tell anybody about, and it'll stun you. And it's designed to throw you off guard. Be very careful and be very wary of that. That's demonic activity. Now, the angelic conflict Jesus faced involved more than just his exorcising the demons from this man. It also affected Jesus' personal reputation, his credibility, and even his ministry in verses 8 to 12. When Jesus asked for the name of the demon answered, "My name is Legion, for we are many." A legion in the Roman army numbering between 3,000 and 6,000 men. The demons and the man begged Jesus not to send them out of the country, but to send them among a herd of pigs nearby that they might indwell the pigs. Now, this might initially appear to be a spiritually neutral request, but it was a loaded entrapment for Jesus. Demons are very cruel, just like Satan. Had Jesus refused this request, the demons would have left Jesus appearing to condone the raising of pigs for human consumption in violation of the Mosaic law. And then Jesus would be seen as a lawbreaker. At least they would have that reputation. However, if Jesus consented to their request, the demons could enter the pigs, causing the pigs to kill themselves as they did, which would upset those in that area who raised the pigs for Gentile consumption, which it did, causing the community to reject Jesus' ministry in the area. And that's exactly what happened. What Jesus chose to do was to protect his righteousness and do what was actually right, even though that would negatively impact his reputation and leave his reputation with God.
There's something that's more important than your reputation, that is doing that what is right. So Jesus chose the path of personal righteousness, trusting the Father to counter the misrepresentation to his character and so to his ministry that the demon's reaction to his righteousness had caused. Now, to heed the law, what was absolutely essential for Jesus to be our sinless sin bearer, he let the demons enter and kill the herd of pigs. This led to the community's negative reaction and rejection of Jesus as they thought that he was going to destroy all of their commercial activity in the area. And this is why, in verse 17, they began to pray him to depart out of their coasts. They thought Jesus was bad news, you got to get out of here. Now, God countered this misrepresentation. How did he do it? By way of the testimony of the saved man. You'll notice in verse 18, after the man who had been demon-possessed requested that he might be with Jesus, Jesus would not allow him. He said, you go home to your friends. Actually, a better translation is to your family, and tell them how great things the Lord has done for you and has compassion. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis. Decapolis is the word, deca means 10. Polis means village or town. There are 10 villages there over on the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee. This man went through all of those villages telling them the great things that Jesus had done. Now, this would have an impact because these people all knew about this man. He was a famous demoniac that nobody wanted to have anything to do with. And here he is talking about Jesus. Well, what that did was open up the door for Jesus to do something much later. If you look ahead to Mark chapter 7, verse 31, it says, again, departing from the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, he came into the Sea of Galilee through the midst of the coasts of Decapolis. Okay, this is where this man had been sharing this testimony. And what happened in Decapolis? Notice chapter 8, verse 1. In those days, the multitude being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him and said unto them, I have compassion on the multitude because they now have been with me for 3 days and they have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own homes, they will faint in the way. For divers of them have come from afar. The disciples answered, from whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he said, how many loaves do you have? They said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit on the ground, and guess what? He fed them. It was a feeding of the 4,000. There were over 4,000 people there. They only counted men in those days, so they probably had about 16,000 people total. 16, maybe even to 20,000 people. Because of this man's testimony in the area, Jesus was welcomed back later, and they accepted it. So God overcame the reputation harm that had happened to Jesus' ministry. And there's a tremendous lesson in this. If we do what is right, we don't have to worry about our reputation. God will provide what we need for our reputation so that we can carry on a ministry. What we have to do is to focus on doing what is right. So when its telltale characteristics signaled Jesus faced angelic conflict, he kept to the path of personal righteousness, letting the Father protect his consequently demon-maligned reputation and ministry. So may we, like the demoniac, put our trust in Jesus Christ to be saved, and that if we face an angelic conflict situation with its signs, as described in the message above, 2 Roman numeral 2a 1-7, may we always take the path of personal righteousness, not yielding to Satan's pressures to compromise with sin, trusting God to give us victory in the end.